Morning of today's daf in Nida is Mem Tes. We're in Mem Ches and Beis. We're in the middle of the Amud. We're starting with the words this morning, Tanur Rabbanan. Yesterday we started the new parak. Sixth parak of the Masechta talks about simanim. A woman is an adult when she has simanim. She shows clear indications that she has passed the point of katnus. She's no longer a minor, but rather now she is an adult. Now again, with an adult and a woman, so it's a little bit more complex than a man. A man, it's just very simple. Katana, or I should say better, katan and gadol. That's simple. But when it comes to a woman, however, there's katana, there's nara, there's bogeris. So there's really, within adulthood, there's two stages within adulthood. There's nara and then there's bogeris. And as we already pointed out numerous times, the reason why it's divided is because after she becomes an adult, meaning going from katana to the next stage up, which is godless, but in the first stage of godless, she's a nara. That stage lasts for 6 months. Interesting, by the way. We haven't seen our Gemara discuss the length of Narus. That is the Gemara elsewhere, if I remember correctly, it's in Ksuvos. But the length of Narus is 6 months. But as far as what Narus is, so she's an adult, but at the same time, she's still under the jurisdiction of her father. Her father is entitled to her Metzias, her Maisei Yadeha. That is Narus. And the next stage going up from there is a Bogeris. She now becomes a full-fledged adult, independent of her father, and she is no longer under the jurisdiction of her father. This is what we've been discussing already. The truth of the matter is we've been discussing this back in the fifth parak, but the sixth parak continues this discussion. What's going to happen is as follows in the sixth parak. Sixth parak is a lot of fun because the first Mishnah stays on the topic of simanim and a woman, and then from that point going forward, the Mishnahs go on tangents. So today's daf and the balance of the sixth parak really takes us through various tangents of other halachas. What is the common denominator? What strings together all these Mishnayos? The idea that there are two factors, right? Our Mishnah talks about two factors, the Siman Elyon and Siman Tachton, which I'm going to explain better in just a moment. So the later Mishnayos also go over two factors. It won't take us through the rest of the sixth parak. The end of the sixth parak comes back to the topic of Nida. But anyway, at least in the first part of the sixth parak, we're talking about two factors. Now, when it comes to a woman, what did we learn yesterday? There's a Siman Tachton, Siman Elyon. So there are two simanim, there are two indicators in a woman that she has arrived at the point of adulthood. She left katana and now she has entered into nara. We already said at the end of the fifth parak exactly, not exactly, but more or less what that looks like in terms of the woman regarding the siman elyon. Siman elyon is the chest area and siman tachton is the lower area. What exactly is going to determine her adulthood? So as we already learned yesterday, it's a siman tachton. Siman tachton, that really is the demarcation, and that really will be the sign. In fact, not even so much the siman, but more of the siba. It really tells us that she has now entered into adulthood. What's the siman elyon? Siman elyon is kind of revelatory about the siman tachton. And as we learned yesterday, and this is the opinion of the Chachamim, meaning we know the sequence. The sequence is first the siman tachton comes, and then the siman elyon comes. So, assuming that is the sequence, so once you see there's a siman elyon, so obviously there's going to be a siman tachton. That is the position of the Chachamim. Now, yesterday's daf, we pointed to Rav Meir already in the Mishnah, which is that Rav Meir says not always. That usually is the sequence. That first Siman Tachton and then Siman Elyon, but according to Rav Meir, there are occasions, there are times where you'll have Siman Elyon come before Siman Tachton, and so therefore that's a miut, and Rav Meir's choshish in lemiuta, and that was a big part of yesterday's daf. Okay. But in the meantime, however, this is we're going to stay on the position of the Chachamim, that first Siman Tachton comes, then Siman Elyon comes. What really transitions her from being a Ketana to a Godola is going to be Siman Tachton. But assuming a sequence of Siman Tachton followed by Siman Elyon, so once you see Siman Elyon, so you know the Siman Tachton has arrived. Okay, that is a quick summary of what we discussed since the beginning of the Perek, and also just a general summary of where we are in the Masechta. So where does age play in all this, right? That's right. That's excellent. Meaning, so most of our discussion yesterday revolved around maturation signs and actual physical development. And where does age play a role in all this? And so we're going to go back to what we said already a couple of days ago. And it happens to be, it's exactly where the Gemara is beginning right now. And that is that there is interplay between physical maturation and age, meaning you need both, right? Physical signs without age, without being the proper age, is going to be meaningless. The Gemara description of any kind of physical signs. If there are hairs that are growing before she's 12 years of age, so typically we describe that as a shumat, some sort of mole, some sort of growth, but it's not. It doesn't qualify halachically as a hair. So it has to be that the samanim come also with the age. So, right, it's an excellent point. So it's really both the simanim and the shanim that are going to qualify. Okay. With all that stated, now we are on Mem Chasam and Beis Tan Rabbana. We're right in the middle of the Amud, and now we're talking about the Bedikas. Okay. As we already pointed out, and Gemara is going to make the point, a Bedika is obviously very delicate because we're talking about a woman, and there's obviously issues of Tznius, and who's going to be doing the Bedikas? So you'll have other women doing the Bedikas. It really touches on a fundamental issue. You have another woman doing a bedika. Generally speaking, in halacha, a woman has a certain amount of ne'emanas, eid echa ne'eman bisurin. One witness can be believed when it comes to iser. But when you're talking about davar she'be'erva, when you're talking about arayas, so you need shtei kasher eidim. So a woman over here is doing a bedika. That in of itself is a challenge in terms of how exactly is she going to be doing a bedika. We're talking about the ability of this young woman to get married. And it's a davar she'be'erva. And so how can the women do bedika overall? So I'm going to come back to that point in just a little bit. The brisa that we're going to start this morning is going to be talking about bedika, when the bedika is done, who the bedika is done by, in terms of establishing that this woman now is a nara. Tanu Rabbanan.
Two women or one?
No, presumably just one. Presumably. Call hanivdakos. Nivdakos apinashim. Now, anyone who is subject to a bedika and an examination is going to be done by another woman. And Rabbi Eliezer had his mother doing the bedikas. Rabbi Eliezer had his wife doing the bedikas. Rabbi Shmuel had his mother doing the bedikas. Okay, so according to the Tanakhama of this brisa, look, women are going to be doing the bedikas on other women. Let's touch on the issue of how we're having a woman do a bedika on something that is so halachically critical. It's a davar she'be'erva. Rashi. Rashi writes over here, I'm reading the Rashi inside, Nashim Bot Gososan. Debain Amru Isnu, Bain Amru Lesnehu Bektana Mechaskinala. Vala Valai Samchinan. Uvdika San Lahachi Mahanya. So, look, it says Rashi. Let's say that the report is that they have. Let's say the report is that they don't have. When it comes to Katana, we operate with a chazaka. The chazaka of a katana, of course, is that she does not have. So as far as the bedika is concerned, says Rashi, what is the bedika going to do? So let's say the bedika is done on these girls while they are in a state of katnas, and there happens to be growth. Now, as we already pointed out, growth before she becomes 12 years of age is not halachically significant. In fact, it's a shuma. Shuma translates as a mole. Anyway, it's a growth, but not halachically recognized sa'aros. As a result of that, if what happens after 12 is that it's just that growth that already was there before she was 12, so then it's going to be halachically disregarded. Ula achra perek nami. And then Rashi says, and now let's say the bedika was done after the girl was an adult. Meaning, I say adult over here, I mean nara. I mean the first stage of adulthood. So let's say after adulthood the bedika is done. So Rashi says, fine, and we'll trust him. But Rashi also adds the point, and this is critical, that we expect it to come. Meaning when the women are giving testimony, they're giving testimony to something which is expected. It's normal. So Eidos becomes an issue when I'm giving testimony about something which is surprising or didn't expect, right? A murder, right? A crime. But over here, we're giving testimony on something which is development, which is normal. And so therefore Rashi says, so that's fine. Can I borrow the Gemara's terminology that we already saw and we're going to see in a little bit later this morning, and that is chazaka, meaning the chazaka de Rava. We know that a woman and a boy, for that matter, when they hit the point of puberty, they're going to have hairs growing. So the truth of the matter is that it's a bedika, but it's not really edus, because all they're doing is just telling us something that we expect it to happen. V'i amri lesnehu lo mimayenes dechei shen hashem anashu. Hilkach anashim lo samchinan. And let's say after these girls become an adult and a bedikah is done, so okay, so what is that going to tell us? Well, we expected the saros to be there. They're not there as reported by the women. So what that means to say now is that these women can't do a miyun. Now Rashi over here is very careful about what the ramifications now are of a bedikah post adulthood, where no saros are discovered. So Rashi writes very carefully, all that means is that now she can no longer do miyun. She can no longer do miyun. Wait 1 second. She can no longer do miyun. Isn't she a katana? So Rashi writes, not necessarily. Dechayshin and Shemanashu, because we're afraid that maybe there was saros there. We already entertained this idea a couple of days ago, that she becomes a Nara. She turns 12 years of age. There was saros there, and they fell out. It's a possibility, albeit not that great a chance, but at least it's possible. And Hilkach Anashim L'samchinan. So we're not really being somech al Hanashim. Meaning, so what Rashi did over the course of this Rashi is he really pared down exactly what kind of testimony we're talking about in terms of the bedikah. It's extraordinarily limited. Meaning, the best that's going to happen, not the best, but the most influence they can have in terms of reporting what they saw is a pre-existing growth that was there before she was an adult, where if they say that was the same growth that was there after adulthood, so that's what they could say. But after that, generally speaking, we're really operating with chazaka. Okay, that's the way Rashi presents the Gemara. Let's go back to the Gemara. So far we have the Tanakhama. Tanakhama said, a bedikah is done, and when the bedikah is done, so it's going to be done by women. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, now we're going to have in this brisa two more opinions, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and it's clear that they're both limiting. What's not clear is why are they limiting, and the Gemara is going to explain. So first we're going to do is I'm just going to run through Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, read the words, get some sort of understanding, but obviously once we get to the Gemara, we're going to have a much better understanding of what they're saying. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lifnei ha-perek la'achar ha-perek nashim bodkos hasan. So if it's before the perek and after the perek, so we're going to have women check them. And when we say perek over here, let's assume that we're talking about from the age of 11 to 12. Okay, from the age of 11 to 12, so we are in this period of Mufla Samach Le'ish. We already discussed this before. The time period in which the Torah extends them an additional year, meaning an additional year before their Bas Mitzvah, in which even though they're not subject to the Chiv of Torah Mitzvos, if they make a Neder, the Neder is binding. So when we say Lifnei HaPerek, we're talking about before they're 11. And when we say La'achar HaPerek, we're talking about after 12. And so according to Rabbi Yehuda, Lifnei HaPerek and La'achar HaPerek can have women checking them. But Toch HaPerek ain't Nashim Bot, Nassam She'ein Masin Sfeikos HaPinashim. But during this year, from 11 to 12, we're not going to have women check them. And the reason why is because Ein Masin Sfeikos HaPinashim. We're not going to have any doubt being resolved by women. What does he mean by that? So, like I said earlier, stay tuned. We're going to understand Rabbi Yehuda better in just a bit. Rabbi Shimon Omer, now Rabbi Shimon says, Av Toch HaPerek Nashim Bot Gosso Son. So Rabbi Shimon says that no, even during this year from 11 to 12, we'll have women checking them, and they're going to have nemanus, they're going to have credibility, and then they can have credibility to be machmir, but not to be mekel. What did that line of the brisa mean? I'm going to ask for patience. We're going to get there. Ketza gedola hi shalot temayin, ketani hi shalot tachlots. So right. So what exactly do we mean? So what we mean to say is the following. So we'll say that Gedola hi shelo tema'in, we'll say that she's an adult and that she can no longer do miyun, because remember, we discussed this yesterday, miyun, that's the annulment of a marriage that a girl can do in extraordinarily limited circumstances, where she's married off by either her mother or her brother, and the marriage is a din derabanan, so under those circumstances, while she's still a katana, she could do miyun. She could reject the husband that was selected for her, no get is required, but this can only be done while she's a katana. So as long as she's a katana, miyun can be done. So what the bedikah can ascertain is that she's no longer katana, and therefore she no longer is entitled to do miyun. A katana yishalo tachlots. Or the bedikah could tell us that she's still a katana where she can't do chalitza. So you understand that the ramifications of the bedikah are all going to be lechumra. But what the bedikah cannot do is the bedikah cannot allow for kulas. Meaning, let's say the bedikah was done and it was established that she still is a katan, she could do miyun. No. For that, the bedikah is not going to be effective, and neither for the chalitza. Let's say the bedika was done. Oh, she's an adult. Okay, so now she can do chalitza. To that degree, no. So to be machmir, the bedika will be effective. To be mekel, the bedika will not be effective. This last line of the braisa, was that in support of Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint? So let's all stay tuned, because there is a lot of clarification that's necessary to get us through the positions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon of the braisa, and also that last line of the braisa of being machmir but not being mekel. So a lot of explaining to do. And the Gemara is going to take care of it right now. Amar Mar. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lifnei Aperek L'Acha Aperek Neshem Bot Genosan. Okay, so we are going to the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that before 11 and after 12, bedika can be done by other women, but not from the age of 11 to 12. Why not? What's going on over here? Bishlam Lifnei Aperek by bedika di Mishach L'Acha Aperek Shemaninu. Now, the pre-11 bedika. So I understand that, says the Gemara, because the pre-11 bedika is going to establish that if there's a Shuma, so then that Shuma will be marked off, so that if later, after she becomes a quote-unquote an adult, meaning after she turns 12, so all that is evident is that Shuma that already pre-existed, so we'll know that that can't be counted towards her Sa'aros. So the Gemara says, I understand that. And Elal Achra Perek Lamali Bedika. So, but let's try to understand. After 12, why are you doing a Bedika? V'ama Rava Ketana She'igil L'chlash No'sein Otzricha Bedika Chazakei V'yisimonim. And what about Chazakei the Rava? Meaning, Rava taught us that a woman after 12 years of age is presumed to have entered into adulthood. It's a chazaka. And so why am I doing a bedika after 12? So, ki amar Rava chazaka lamin aval chalitza by bedika. So the Gemara says, and we already said this before, but it's important to refresh, that according to Rava, the chazaka tells us, yes, she has entered into adulthood, but only banning her from doing miyun. The chazaka won't allow us to say, oh, she can now do positive actions like chalitza. Okay. So, the Gemara says, fine. So now I've explained why it is that a bedika is done before she's 11. And why it is, even though chazaka de Rava after 12, but still, a bedika has to be done after 12 as well. Because chazaka de Rava is limited. Fine. Tocha perek, ein ashen bot kino son. But now what needs explanation is Tocha Perek. What about from the age from 11 to 12, according to Rabbi Yehuda? So it goes like this. Kasava Tocha Perek, Kalacha Perek. Ah. So the Gemara explains to us the Yesod, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, what's his position about Tocha Perek? We had this debate already back in the fifth Perek, and we are going over this debate again. From 11 to 12 for a girl, if she has the simanim, does that make her an adult? And this was a machlokas. And the Gemara now is saying that it's also the machlokas here in the Braisa. And Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that Tocha Perek Kalacha Perek, which means that between the age of 11 to 12, if in fact she exhibits simanim, she has shtei sa'aros, she will be treated like an adult. So now it's everything now is explainable. After 12 years of age, so other women could do a bedika. Why? Because we're not really relying on the other women. Meaning we have Chazaka de Rava. So it's Chazaka de Rava coupled with now the revelation given to us by other women. But that's not edus, that's not testimony. It's just simply now a smach, it's being supported by the Chazaka. That's very good. Tocha perek deleka chazaka de rava lo semchina anashim, meaning that the aleph is a prefix. Velo batki nashim. But from 11 to 12, we need edus because we don't have a chazaka. And so the only thing that would verify that these women have now gone from katnus to godless is only with testimony. Also, for that, we can't have a woman testify. Okay. So now we have much better clarity in Rav Yehuda. And let me just quickly recap. According to Rav Yehuda, bedika is done before 11. Why? Just to ascertain if, in fact, there's a shuma, so that if later on the only thing that's still there is just that shuma, so it's discounted as being not one of the sa'aros. A bedika done after 12 can be done by other women. Why? Because we have a chazaka. And so all the other women doing are just supporting the chazaka. Because remember, the chazaka by itself is still limited. It only bans her from doing miyun, but it does not allow her to do chalitza. So now you have the chazaka coupled with the, I'm putting it in lowercase letters. I know they don't exist in the Hebrew language. But it being supported also by the edus of women, so fine. So you take the chazaka and the edus, and that now can fully verify that they're an adult. So what about during Tocha Perek from 11 to 12? We don't have the chazaka of Rava yet. The only thing that would verify, and Rav Yehuda holds that Tocha Perek is Kalacha Perek. So it's possible that they can become adult, but for this you need testimony, and for testimony cannot be relied on by women. Fine. That is all Shitas Rav Yehuda. Now, Shitas Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Amar Avtocha Perek Nashim Bot Kenosan. So Rabbi Shimon says that other women could do a bedika for these women between the age of 11 to 12. What is behind that? Because Avtocha Perek Lefnei Perek. Because Rabbi Yehuda is of the position, Rabbi Shimon is of the position that from 11 to 12, even if there are sa'aros, she still will be a ketana. The Tocha Perek is Kilifnei Perek, which if you remember back in the previous Perek, same word, different meanings. In the previous Perek, that's the halacha that we follow. That Tocha Perek is Kilifnei Perek. So, Ubaye Bedika, Dimishach Hilacha Perek Shimon Ninhu. Okay, so very good. So that means to say that before 12 years of age, she can't become an adult. And so therefore, there's no testimony over here from 11 to 12. The purpose of the bidika from 11 to 12? Just to establish if there's a shuma. That's all. Good. And that's the position of Rabbi Shimon. Okay? And so now we have almost full clarity on the Braisa. We now understand better the position of Rabbi Yehuda, the position of Rabbi Shimon. We just have one more hurdle, and that is that last line of the Braisa where we talk about we're going to be machmir but not mako. So the Gemara is bothered by that last line of the Braisa. Who is that going like? And as Rashi points out over here, can't be going like Rabbi Shimon, because consider, according to Rabbi Shimon, we just got done saying that Rabbi Shimon, there's no testimony. Up to 12, we're just establishing if there's a Shuma or not. After 12, we have a Chazaka. So what is the Braisa talking about? We're only going to be Machmer, we're not going to be Mekel. How did you understand that line of the Braisa? So the Gemara is going to give a couple suggestions. V'ne'emenes ish l'achmir v'loh hakel. Hay man ketani la'i ba'is eima Rebbe Yehuda v'atocha perek v'i ba'is eima Rebbe Shimon ola achar perek v'leisei chazaka d'rava. So, one of two possibilities. One, that last line of the Braisa is going like Rebbe Yehuda. Oh, very good. And because again, remember, according to Rebbe Yehuda, what do we know? That Tocha Perek is Kela Achar Perek, according to Rabbi Yehuda, which means that there is a possibility of Eidos to be given from 11 to 12. So for that, the only thing that the testimony of another woman is going to do is only allow us to be Machmer, but not be Mekel. Why? Because if we're going to be Mekel, we're going to treat her pronouncement as testimony, and we can't do that. Okay, that's one possibility of how to understand the last line of the Braisa. So you're reading the last line of the Braisa, but it's going back to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. A little choppy, but that's one possibility. The other possibility is it's going on Rabbi Shimon. Going on Rabbi Shimon? Wow, how? Meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, up to 12, all we're doing is just establishing if it's a Shuma. After 12, you have the Chazaka. So they're not really giving testimony. So why wouldn't I be Mekel? So the Gemara's suggestion is maybe it's going like Rabbi Shimon. And ik vi by sema on top of mem testament aleph, I by sema Rabbi Shimon l'achar perek v'leisei chazaka d'rava. It's possible that the brisa goes like this: the last part of the brisa, we're only going to be machmir, we're not going to be mekel, is going on shitas Rabbi Shimon. Why do I ever need their testimony? As we just got done explaining, could be that I need their testimony after 12. Why? Because it could be that the author of this brisa doesn't subscribe to the chazaka of Rava. If you don't subscribe to the chazaka of Rava, so now what? So now she's 12 years of age, and now we don't know if she's an adult because you also need simanim. Now I'm going to need the testimony of other women. Well, once you have the testimony of other women, so now that's actual edus. Oh, since it's actual edus, so then you can't have edus of a woman. So the only thing we could do is go to be machmir with that information, but we're not going to be mekel with that information. Okay. After now having covered the Braisa was challenging. The Gemara now fleshed out all the positions of the Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, the last line of the Braisa. We continue. We go back to our Mishnah. And if you look back at the Mishnah in yesterday's daf, that last line of the Mishnah seemed to be superfluous. It said, that, remember the Braisa, the Mishnah was talking about where you had the Simon Elyon and the assumption of the Chachamim, Simon Elyon only comes after Simon Tachton, which means now she's an Ara, which means now she's a Gedola, and therefore she could do Yibam, she could do Chalitza. And then, what does the Mishnah tell us? Mimnei Shamru, Efshala Tachton, Lavo, Ashala Ba Elyon, Aval E, Efshala Elyon, Lavo, Ashala Ba Tachton. And then the Mishnah basically repeats what we already know. The Mishnah already told us that. Look back at one line earlier. Afa Pishi E, Efshar. The Mishnah already told us that you can't have a sequence of first Simon Elyon and then Siman Tachton. Okay, and now I know, as we already pointed out, Ramir says it can happen, but the Chachamim say cannot happen. And then the end of the mission reiterates what we already know. So, Mimnei Sha'amru Efshar V'chula, Hasul Amali, why do I need that extra line of the Mishnah? So, Hatani La Resha, V'chi Tema Mishum Dekabai Le Mistama Karabanan, and what? And the end of the Mishnah is just there to verify and validate that the Halacha falls like the Chachamim and not Rabbi Meir? Pshita Yachav Rabim, Halacha Karabim. We know that already. When you have a debate between an individual and the majority, the halacha falls like the majority. So the Gemara makes one suggestion, which is, look, remember yesterday's daf, after the machlokas of Rameir and the Chachamim was explained, then there are psukim, two psukim in Yecheskel. Both seem to favor the position of Rameir. And so therefore, if I have not just a sheet of Rameir, even though he's a das yachid, but I also have psukim that support his position as well, so that would give more weight to the position of Rav Meir. And maybe then the halacha falls like Rav Meir. Or suggests the Gemara that really what the last line of the first Mishnah is doing is setting us up for all the upcoming Mishnayos. Meaning that from this point going forward, we're going to be learning Mishnah after Mishnah for the next 2-3 dapim, in which we're going to be talking about two factors. When there is a halacha that is contingent on two factors, what's the critical factor and what's the secondary factor? So since our Mishnah opens up the door for that, so that last line of the Mishnah kind of is a setup for all upcoming Mishnayos, okay? Which now is a wonderful segue to all upcoming Mishnayos. So from this point going forward now, we're going to be going well away from the topic of Nida. We're going to go to many other areas in Halacha, and here is one of those chances in Shas where we get to explore. And we're going to go over numerous halachas, and again, the common denominator, they are two-factor halachas, meaning that there seemingly are two significant factors, but what we're going to do is we're going to assign which one's the primary, which one's the secondary. Much like we discussed in the previous mishnah, the first mishnah of our perek, that when a woman, for her to become an adult, from going from ketana to nara, so there are two factors, the siman elyon, siman tachton, but we talked about the primacy of siman tachton, and the secondary nature of Siman Elyon. And now all we're going to do is the same thing in many other areas in Halacha. We start with the Mishnah, Kayotzebo Klicheres, Shu Machnis Motzi, V'yeshu Motzi V'enu Machnis. So you talk about a Klicheres. Now Klicheres, an earthenware utensil, which is subject to Tumah by having Tumah come into its interior. So if it has a hole in it, so it no longer is going to be a Kli, and so therefore it's no longer going to be Makabel Tumah. Furthermore, we can even go one step further. Once it has a hole that makes it dysfunctional, even if it was Tameh, it no longer is going to be Tameh because the hole now takes away its utility, and so therefore that's what's called Shvira. It's called the breaking of the Kli. When exactly is the hole going to take away its utilitary nature? So that's what the Mishnah is teaching us, is that the hole's got to be big enough. Now, in terms of a hole, there is what's called Machnis Umotzi. And we're talking about putting liquid in versus having liquid come out. Now, in terms of a hole for liquid to come out, to escape a kli, obviously it doesn't have to be that big. Just think about, I know we don't have many earthenware jugs around, but think about any kli that has even the smallest crack in it, and if there's water inside, so water's going to leak out. It's going to drip out. So that's what's called motzi. How about getting water in through that little crack? That's a challenge. And so therefore, in terms of a hole, obviously, a hole that is machnis is going to be considerably larger than a hole that's motzi. I say considerably. I'm talking in relative terms, but it's just going to be larger. And so now, let's reread the first line of the Mishnah. Kal yotzei bo kol kli cheres shehu machnis motzi. Now we have pshat. If the hole is big enough where water can come in, it obviously is going to be big enough for the water to escape. V'yeshu motzi v'eino machnis. But if the hole is only big enough for the water to be motzi, so then the hole will not be big enough to be machnis. And the Mishnah does not tell us, and so what?
Yeah.
Okay, good, good. So all we've established is just simply the size of the hole. And if it's machnis, it's motzi. If it's motzi, it won't necessarily be machnis. So good. So, and so what? So stay tuned, as we're going to learn together in the Gemara. Second halacha of the Mishnah, kol eivish yesh bo tziporin yesh bo etzem yesh bo etzem ve'ein bo tziporin. Okay, we're talking now about an extra digit on the hand or an extra digit on the foot. Okay, an extra digit on the hand is going to be considered part of the person, but, says the Mishnah, if it has a fingernail, so yesh bo etzem, it's going to have a bone. But sometimes it can have a bone and won't have a fingernail. So an extra appendage on the hand sometimes qualifies as part of the hand, sometimes does not qualify part of the hand, and we're talking now about fingernails versus just having a bone. So again, there are two factors, fingernail, bone. If it has a fingernail, for sure we'll have a bone, but not the opposite. If it has a bone, it won't necessarily have a fingernail. And why is it so important to know about this? So as Rashi points out, and again, it's going to become clear as we go through the Gemara as well, because if this digit is in fact now considered part and parcel of the hand, and that person would to die, and now we're talking about the human remains, so we know that an aver of a person is metame otamas ohel. And so even if it's less than a kezias, as long as you have the full aver, so it's going to be metame otamas ohel. So this extra appendage will be called a full aver, but only if it has fingernail and bone. Okay. And once it has fingernail, you know it has bone. Again, it's the same idea. There are two factors, but there's a primary factor and a secondary factor. And the secondary just simply indicates that the primary was there. So you have fingernail, for sure it had bone. Next topic. Called metame medrash metame tumas mace. V'yesh metame tumas mace v'ena metame medrash. Anything that's eligible and subject to tumas medrash, as we've learned already numerous times. If you have a tumas, zav, or zava, or nida, or yoledes. So they all are going to be an avatuma. On top of that, anything they sit on is going to be tame. But the following conditions. The item they're sitting on has to be designed to be sat on. In other words, if it's a utensil that, like a barrel, for example, where, you know what, I need to rest, I'm going to sit on this barrel. The barrel is not designed for sitting. And so therefore, it's not subject to tumas medrash. As we learned already numerous times, once something is tame tumas medrash, the chair or the bed, so then it's going to be tame to the same degree that the person is. Person's an avatama, the chair is an avatama. Person's an avatama, the bed is an avatama. And even if there is not direct physical contact between the person and the chair, I can have beds stacked up one on top of another, and if they're lying down on the top bed, all the beds below that are also going to be tame as well. Okay? Special halacha for tumas medrash. Any kli that's eligible for tumas medrash is going to be eligible for tumas mace.
How do you make those items tame?
You put them in a mikvah. And v'yesh shematame tame meis v'ena matame tumas medras. Now there are kalim that are subject to tumas meis but are not going to be subject to tumas medras. Now why are we talking about tumas meis? Could be talking about any type of tumah. It's just a contrast between medras and all other tumas. Why meis? So Rashi asked that question. Rashi gives a wonderful answer. Because we just want to compare apples and apples. Why is medras and meis apples and apples? Because by medras, with the person sitting on the chair, makes the chair an ava tumah. And the same thing is true with tumas meis. If you have human remains in the house, so the keli that's in the house is going to become an avatuma. Remember, mace is an avi avosatuma, so then when it transmits the tuma to a keli, directly from the mace to the keli is also going to be an avatuma. So that's why we like the comparison of medras and mace, because they both are going to transmit to another item that's going to become an avatuma. Okay. There are three halachas in the Mishnah that describe items that have two factors. And again, it's just an establishment of what's the primary and what's the secondary. Okay, so we are going to go now through the Gemara, and as you can imagine, Keseder. We're going to be in order over here of the Mishnah, going through each of the halachas of the Mishnah and explaining them better. Machnas pasul mechata. So in our first halacha of the Mishnah, we talked about a hole in a kli cheres that will render the kli cheres unfit. Okay, now, and we described the hole in one of two dimensions. Either one, it's small enough that allows for hotza'ah, water is going to drip out, but that doesn't necessarily mean that water can come into the kli. That is what's called a motzi. And then there's a hole that's the size of a machnes, which allows water to come out and water to come in. That's a larger hole. Okay, now, machnes, pasul mechatos, pasul mishum gistra. If the hole is large enough for that's a machnes, so then that disqualifies the kli. For chatos, look at the first Rashi in the Gemara. Lekadosh bo mechatos. So, if I wanted to do Kiddush, if I wanted to create the solution of the ashes of the Paraduma and the Mayim Chayim, it has to be done in a Kli. The Torah clearly articulates Mayim Chayim El Keli. And so, it has to have the status, the designation of a Kli. Once it's got a hole in it, the size in which water can come in and come out, so then, at that point in time, it is no longer rendered a Kli, and so therefore, it's not eligible for making the solution of the mechatos. Also, gistera. It's posel mishum gistera. Gistera, Tosus over here points out, the word gistera is a Greek word and see Tosfos for more of the etymology of the word. But anyway, it's talking about a kli cheres that broke but still has utility. So it's the shard of a kli cheres, but it still has usage. But if you will, I'm saying this only by way of analogy, it's a used car. Okay? And so with a new car, I'm just saying this by way of analogy. With a new car, so you're not going to throw it out that quickly. Oh, it has some problems for you? Okay, so you'll take it to the mechanic. When it's a used car and it's giving you headaches, okay. Assuming you're financially able to do so, okay, you're ready to move on. So with the Gistera as well, being that now it's no longer the original Kli, but it's the remains of a Kli, but still has utility, so it's a used Kli. And so, Poso Mishum Gistera. If the hole is big enough where it's Machnas and Motzi, even by the Gistera, so at that point in time, it's discarded. Okay. Motzi, now, if the hole is only large enough so that water can escape but can't come in, so Kashla Mechatas. So as far as Mechatas is concerned, so you have a Kli good enough for Mechatas. Because the truth of the matter is that this hole, which is only a one-way hole, so okay, so you can, you'll be able to stomach the idea that some water is going to drip out, it still has the status of a Kli, I could use it for Mechatas. Upasa Mishum Gistera. But it's not going to be good for a Gistera. And again, going back to my analogy, because the Gistera already, it's damaged goods, right? It's a used product. And so now, it's, right, water is now dripping out, and it's already a Gistera? Oh, okay, you should throw it out. Fine. And so that's why it's Poso Mishum Gistera. Now, Amrav Asi Shonin, Rav Asi says Shonin, Rashi over here says Shonin is a derivative of Halach L'Moshe Misinai. So, Kli Cheres Yara B'Konis Mashke. So, when it comes to a Kli Cheres, what's the shear of a Kli Cheres? It's Konis, meaning that the hole has to be large enough where water can come out, and water can also come in. V'lo Amr Motzi Mashke Elalein Gistera Bilvad. Now, as far as Motzi, that only becomes significant if we're talking about a Gistera. Because again, the Gistera already is damaged goods. And now, even though the hole is generally insignificant, it's only Motzi, but by the Gistera already, I'm already to throw it out. It's kind of what we already said, but it's the Rav Asi is giving it to us via Halacha Moshe Misinai. My time, I'm Arzucha Breder of Nachman Lefishein Ormim Have Gistera Le Gistera. And the Gemara says it. I said it a little bit differently, but it's the idea of once it's already used and now it's got a hole. So now, am I really ready to hold on to it? Mm-hmm. Even though the hole's small and the hole's only allowing water to exit and not enter. But okay, already at this point in time, let's just throw it out. Tan Rabbanan Ketzav Bokin Kli Cheres Le'Dayim Nikah B'Konis Mashke Im Lav. Okay. And the Gemara now is going to give us numerous ways to test a Kli Cheres. So here's now what we've established. When it comes to a Kli Cheres, how large does the hole have to be to disqualify the Kli Cheres? A hole large enough where water can escape and water can also come in. So, what tests are we going to use to see if water is going to come in? Okay. Interesting Gemara coming up. So, Yavi Areva Malaya Maim Venosin Keder LaSochim Kansa Biyadusha Konis Mashke Vim La Biyadusha Motzi Mashke. So, suggestion number one. Okay. Sorry, I like the visual. Okay, so suggestion number one. Okay, imagining now that this is a Kli Cheres, imagining that there's a small hole in the bottom. So suggestion number one of the Gemara is to take the Kli Cheres and put it into a pool of water. No, it doesn't have to be a pool. But put it into a tub of water. And now see if water is going to go in through that small hole. Meaning I clearly see that water is coming out. There's a small leak. But again, to pasel a Kli Cheres, it has to be motzi umachnes. So I put it into the water and see if water comes in. That is test number one.
Why wouldn't it come in?
Why wouldn't it come in?
If there's no mechanism to prevent it to come in, it would come in.
So the imla biyadusha motzi mashke. So first of all, the hole is just simply maybe too small. Surface tension. And then Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kofef. I'm sorry. Did I skip words? Imla biyavireva malei amayim rosin kedel lasocha im kanz biyadusha kanz mashke v'imla biyadusha motzi mashke. Okay, fine. Top of the Mem Testament base. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kofev Azne Keder Lasochu Umeitzes Alei Mayim V'Im Konis Biyadusha Konis Mashke V'Im La Biyadusha Motzi Mashke. Now Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Now Rabbi Yehuda does not articulate his objection, but Rashi explains it, and that is as follows: when I take the Kli and did what I suggested according to the Tanakhama, which is to put it into the water, so what you're doing is you're creating pressure.
Yes.
And so what that pressure may end up doing is that pressure may end up serving as more of a seal than it is allowing the water to come in. And so therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, let's see if water can come in without the pressure. So what are you going to do? I'm not going to do this here because there is liquid in this, but you're going to just simply turn it upside down and you're going to pour water on it. Now, if any water gets in while I'm pouring water on top of it, so then it's a machnas. So it's an interesting machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanna Kamma, what will serve as a good indicator of water coming in. So according to the Tanna Kamma, you have to have it, you can have it, the hole facing the water and putting it into the water. And Rabbi Yehuda's objection is, no, that creates pressure. And that may not indicate now whether that hole was good enough for water to come in. Rather, turn it over, pour water on top of it. Shemati Moshke, continuing in the Gemara, this is still Rabbi Yehuda talking. So, if Sal Gabe Aor, Vim Aor Ma'amida, Biadusha Motzi Mashke, Vimla Biadusha Machnis Mashke. Put it over a fire. And what's going to happen now is that if over the fire the water emerges, so then you know that it's Motzi. Im Aor Ma'amida, Biadusha Motzi Mashke. In other words, now with the heat coming up and hitting that hole, so if that heat was strong enough to allow the water to stop from dripping, so now what you're looking at is just a motzi. But even though you have heat and water's coming out, so that is an indicator that that hole was large enough for both motzi and for machnes. V'imla biyadusha machnes mashke. Rabbi Yossi omer aflo sofsa agabe or mimnesha or ma'amida. Now Rabbi Yossi says, look, I like the heat test, but the truth of the matter is that if it's over a direct fire, it could very well be that the reason why the water is being prevented from coming out is because not only do you have heat, but you actually have fire as well. So let's just have heat without fire. So what do you do? Al sofsa agabe aremitz im remitz ma'amida biyadusha motzi mashke v'im lav biyadusha konis mashke. And so just put over coals. So therefore I have heat with no fire. And now if with the heat the water stops dripping out, so then it's just a motzi. If with the heat water drips out, so that means that hole was large enough to be motzi and machnes. Okay. And then there's one more line of the Braisa, a little difficult to translate. Hayatari tipa achar tipa biyadusha konis mashke. Rashi says very clearly that this is another test. Right? Rashi writes, klamar, vizunami bedika, im nasan lasocha mayim behen yotzim tif achar tif. So let's say you put water in, and it's a constant drip. So with a constant drip, you now know that this hole is large enough to not only be motzi but machnis as well. And then the Gemara just simply articulates what we already pointed out, that the difference between the Tanna Kamma and Rav Yehuda is where I put the exterior against the water with or without pressure. According to the Tanna Kamma, it can be done even with pressure, meaning putting it into the bowl of water, even though that creates pressure. And according to Rav Yehuda, no. You have to have water coming into contact with the exterior without the pressure, i.e. invert the kli and pour water on top of it. Various tests to see whether or not the hole is large enough to be machnes or motzi. Anyway, summarize. In order for a kli cheres to become disqualified, no longer have the status of a kli, the hole has got to be big enough. What do we say big enough? We mean the hole has got to allow water to exit and to enter. And then a lengthier discussion in the Gemara in terms of how to test for that. But nevertheless, it's got to be machnes or motzi, with notable exception to a gistera. When it comes to the gistera, which already is a used kli cheres, so there, even though the hole is not big enough, it's only motzi, not machnes, but it's already a used kli cheres, and you're just simply going to throw it out, even with the smallest hole. Okay, next. Kol eiver sheish bo tziporin, yesh bo tziporin, metame b'magav, v'masa v'ohel. We're talking about the extra digit of the hand. If it had a fingernail on it, so that means it's considered part and parcel of the hand. And so therefore, if it's human remains of said hand, so then, and when I say human remains, I'm just talking about the finger, the extra appendage. So it's going to give off tumah just like a mace. It's maga, it's masa, and ohel. Yesh bo etzem vein bo tzipor metame b'maga v'masa vein metame b'ohel. However, if it's an appendage, but it doesn't have a fingernail, but it just has a bone, so it does not have the status now of an aver. Now, of course, it's still human remains, but it's not metame tumas mace, meaning through ohel. Ohel only comes about through kezias of flesh, or the majority of the bone structure, or an aver. This doesn't qualify as an aver, because it didn't have the fingernail. So it's just simply bones, and a little bit of flesh, but the flesh, assuming of the flesh here in question, is less than a kezayis. So it's only metame b'magav amasa, but not b'ohel. Amr Rav Chisda Dar V'Zir Rabbeinu Agadol. Amr Rav Chisda quotes Rabbeinu Agadol. Rashi over here says it's a reference to Rav. Hamakim Yeh Bezro, and you know, a little tefillah for Rav. Etz b'yisera sheish bo etzem vein bo tzipor metame b'magav amasa veinu metame b'ohel. If I have an extra appendage that has a bone, but it doesn't have a fingernail, so then it doesn't qualify as an aver. It's only metame magav masa, not b'ohel. Amr Rabba Barbachanam Rav Yochanan Kishenin Nisperas Agav Ayat. Also, it's not counted together with the rest of the hand. Meaning for an extra appendage to be qualified as part of the hand and to get the status of aver, it has to be that the person, when he holds his hand up, he can actually count six fingers. Okay? Extra appendage. Next, kol ha-metame medras, kol dechaz la-medras metame tame meis, v'yesh metame tame meis, v'yesh metame medras. Okay. So, the Gemara quotes I think it's a brisa. I'm not sure. The Gemara doesn't introduce it. But, okay, just for argument's sake, let's say it's a brisa, that if it's subject to Tumas Medras, so then for sure it can be subject to Tumas Mace because it's for sure a Kli. But the opposite's not true. If something's a Kli that's subject to Tumas Mace, it's not necessarily Matami Tumas Medras. Again, why? We're going to see why in just a moment. But I'll say it outside. Because something eligible to be Tami Tumas Medras, it has to be designed for sitting. If it's not designed for sitting, even though it's a functional Kli, it's not subject to Tumas Medras. Lasui Amai, Lasui Sa'a V'Tarkav. A bowl, a measuring bowl, which, in a pinch, you could turn it upside down and sit on it. Okay. D'tanya. V'yoshev ha'kli yachol kafa sa'a v'yashav alah, v'tarkav v'yashav alah. So you're taking these larger mixing bowls. And right now, you just want to sit down. So you'll turn it upside down, and you'll sit on these larger sitting bowls. Right? Now it's subject to Tumas Medras, right? No, it's not. So Yachol, I might have thought, right? V'yashav alah, otarka v'yashav alah, Yehei tameh, tameh lomar, asher yashav alah v'zav, mishim yuchal li'yishiva yatzaseh, she'omrim lo, amo v'naseh melachteinu. And with the mixing bowl, if let's say another person's in the kitchen saying, hey, do me a favor, get up. You're on my mixing bowl. I want to use it right now. So that obviously was not designed for yeshiva. And even though somebody could sit on it, that's not going to be subject to Tumas Medras. Tumas Medras is only a kli that was designed for yeshiva. Let's do the next sugya. Yeah. Kol ha-ray ladun dinim nefashos, ray ladun dinim mamonos, v'yesh ray ladun dinim mamonos, v'ein ray ladun dinim nefashos. Okay? To sit on the bench. To be a judge in a beis din. So there is eligibility to be sitting on a capital court. And there's eligibility to sit on a civil court. And if you're eligible to sit on a beis din of din and nefashos, you're for sure eligible to be on a civil court of mamonos. But the opposite's not true. In other words, you could be eligible to be sitting on a civil court, but not on a court for a capital crime. It's a little bit more yes, but well, you'll see. So Amar Rav Yehuda Lasui Mamzer. So who are we describing over here? Meaning, who is the person that can judge civil law but can't judge capital crime? So it's a mamzer. Now Rashi over here quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin quotes a pasuk from Shir Hashirim in terms of how we arrive at that conclusion. Tanina Chadazimna. And now the Gemara says, okay, this is a good mission over here in Nida. It's also the same mission that we have in Sanhedrin. The mission over there says, Akol Kshirim Ladun Dinim Mamnos, Ve'in Akol Kshirim Ladun Dinim Fashos. Ve'avina Bar Lasuya Mai Ve'am Rav Yehuda Lasuya Mamzer. Okay, so what's happening? Meaning our Mishnah Nida is a repeat of a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. And why would it be repeated? Now, I tell you the truth, if I could suggest, I mean, I'm not in a position to, but our Mishnah is here in Nida, this is not primary source. Our Mishnah in Nida are just simply saying, hey, you know, there's so many halachas that follow this theme of there's the primary and there's the secondary. And this just is one of them. So the Gemara is like offended that this point over here in the Mishnah Nida, we already learned back in Sanhedrin. I could try to argue, okay, that the Mishnah Nida is just simply, you know, look, we want to go over all these halachas. And so there, even though we're learning Masechta Nida, it's a great way to review other halachas that have a similar construct. Okay, the Gemara does not argue that way. So everything I just said, you could ignore. Mm-hmm. So chad alasui gever, chad alasui mamzer. And so what the Gemara says is that, yeah, there are two Mishnayos because two categories of people fit in this class of can be part of a civil court, but not a capital court. Look, when it comes to a ger can marry a Jew, a mamzer cannot. So I would have thought, okay, if I had one Mishnah, I would have said mamzer but not ger. And you can argue also, a mamzer, both parents are Jewish, even though it was an illicit relation, and even though the product of that union is a mamzer, but both parents are Jewish. When it comes to a ger, that's not the case. So therefore both Mishnahs are necessary, and so the Gemara seeks a reason why the point is repeated both in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and over here in Nida as well. Okay, let's recap. We went over this morning the Braisa that began on Memches Amud Beis, talking about the Bedika that's done by women for women, the purpose of that Bedika, Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, a better understanding of what's behind the Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and as we already pointed out, we do paskin the halacha that tochazman is kilifneazman, meaning even if simanim are demonstrated before the girl turns 12 years of age, those simanim will not make her a gadol, a gadola, a nara. And we already made that point in the fifth parak, but we also go like that in the sixth parak as well. Okay, the Mishnah continues on theme with primary factor, secondary factor. Our Mishnah on Mem Tes Amud Aleph went through three different halachas. Kli cheres and the size of the hole, machnas emotzi, an extra digit on either the hand or the foot that will be treated like part of the hand, part of the foot, provided it's got a fingernail and a bone. If it has a bone but not a fingernail, no. It has to have a fingernail and a bone. And also, we also learned that it has to be in line with the other fingers. So then it's going to have the status of the hand and therefore have the status of an aver and therefore be mitame, maga, masa, and ohel. The third halacha of the Mishnah is regarding Tumas Medrash. A kli that is subject to Tumas Medrash is certainly going to be subject to Tumas Mace, but not the opposite. A kli could be subject to Tumas Mace, but not subject to Tumas Medrash. And the reason, as the Gemara clearly articulated, is because something to be subject to Tumas Medrash requires designation for sitting on. And then the last halacha that we did today is eligibility to be serving on the court. More people can serve on the civil court than on a capital court. If you're qualified to serve on a capital court, you for sure are qualified to sit on a civil court, but not the opposite. And who is that coming to include? A ger and a mamzer.